Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
You might think financial crime is all about money, but sometimes it ends in murder. I'm Nicole Lappin, host of Money Crimes, a Crime House original podcast. Each episode features a thrilling story about the dark side of finance and how to protect yourself from it. Follow and listen to Money Crimes, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
From KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Those mid swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauly on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go. Let's go.
Well, I certainly hope that you have survived your Black Friday, and here we are for a Graybar Sports Open Line. My name is Matt Pauly. Got you till 8 o'clock this evening, coming straight out of Chiefs football. That was an interesting way to finish. I don't know if there has ever been a team that is more fortunate than the Kansas City Chiefs in the way that they have won games this year. Just weird thing after weird thing after weird thing happening, and them being on the correct side of the final score. I use the word remarkable a lot. I probably use the word remarkable too often, but it is remarkable to watch what we've seen with the Chiefs this year, and hopefully you enjoyed your Black Friday and listening to some Kansas City Chiefs football here on KMOX. Even though it is kind of a pseudo-holiday, we're here. We're doing what we normally do here between 6 o'clock and 8 o'clock on KMOX. If you'd like to join us, you can text into the program at 314-436-7900. Again, text in at 314-436-7900, or you can tweet at me at Matt Pauly on air, MattPauley on air. I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but just coming out of Chiefs football and kind of the biggest national sports story of the day today, I do think it's somewhat interesting to compare the fortunes of the Kansas City Chiefs and the fortunes of the Chicago Bears. Because yesterday on Thanksgiving Day, where we had the NFL triple header, clearly and obviously the biggest story of the day was the way the Bears-Lions game ended and what happened there. And eventually what happened today was the Bears head coach Matt Eberflus has been fired. We'll get into this just a little bit later on in the program, but again, using the word remarkable, just crazy, again, remarkable to see the way the Bears lost that game. But even more notable was, I don't know if hubris is the right word, but just the way that Eberflus went into his post-game press conference and essentially tried to defend his clock management at the end of the game that largely was responsible for at least that game not getting tied up, as the Bears had a really good shot of being able to get into field goal range. And ask any Bears fans, and we've got our resident Bears fan here at KMOX and Chris Ranji, ask any Bears fan, and they can tell you about the various ways the Bears have found ways to lose games this year. It has been just uncanny in just what they do week after week after week. They find new, exciting, for lack of a better term, ways to lose football games. And then on the other side of things, you have the Chiefs, who are now 11-1 and just keep playing close game after close game after close game. The Chiefs become the first team in the NFL to clinch a playoff spot, and they are just rolling along. And they're rolling along in terms of wins, but they're not rolling along in terms of winning games overwhelmingly. The final scores of their last five wins, 19-17 today, 30-27 last week on the road against the Panthers. That before that was the loss against the Bills. Then before that, the week before, a 16-14 win at home against the Broncos, a 30-24 win against the Buccaneers, and a 27-20 win against the Raiders. They're playing close game after close game after close game, and they're, for the most part, they are finding ways to win outside of that game against the Bills. And I don't know where I land on the Chiefs right now, because I feel like, and they're no longer the Super Bowl favorite. The Detroit Lions are the favorite, and the Lions are playing the best football overall in the NFL, their game against the Bears yesterday notwithstanding. But I still feel like once you get into the postseason, no matter how long the postseason goes, even if it ends up being a Lions-Chiefs Super Bowl, I have a hard time understanding how you would ever pick against Kansas City. And there's people yelling at the radio right now saying, well, watch the games, Matt. I am. I get it. They don't look impressive. They're barely winning these games. Weird, funky stuff happens. They get walk-off blocks and the ball being snapped to a quarterback who's not paying attention, and like just crazy, crazy stuff happening at the end of games. I get all of that. I still would just have a really hard time picking against them at any point in the playoffs. Now, if they lose another game in the regular season, they're a two-loss team, maybe we start having a little bit of a different conversation. And they don't have an easy schedule the rest of the way. They'll play the Chargers in their next game, which is going to be on December 8th, so they've got a little bit of time. They'll go to Cleveland to match up against the Browns. The Browns are not good in terms of their record, 3-8, but the Browns might be the best three-win team that's out there. Like, you watch the Browns play, and they do not look terrible. They'll be at home against the Texans a few days before Christmas, and then on Christmas, on a short week, they're going to have to travel to Pittsburgh to take on the Steelers. That's going to be a really tough matchup, and then they go to Denver to play the Broncos to wrap up the regular season in January. So that is not an easy schedule for the Chiefs. I have a hard time believing they're going to win every single one of those games. I can find a reason for them to lose just about every single one of those games. If they were playing the Browns at home, I'd feel a little bit less that way, but they could lose in Cleveland. That's not out of the realm of possibility. We see crazier things happen in the NFL. So, yeah, fun to listen in today to the Chiefs. They hold on for a win against the Raiders. Again, if you're just joining us, and I saw some people on social media who were a little bit confused on what exactly happened at the end of that game. The Raiders were clearly and easily in field goal position, and they kept the drive going. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, as the quarterback, O'Connell, for the Raiders, was still looking around and surveying things before even calling for a snap, the center, for no reason, just a shotgun snap, it goes off of O'Connell's shoulder, basically. He was looking to his left. It goes off of his right shoulder. The Chiefs recover, and that's how they win. You know, the two issues I think you take in this game, by the way, and I'm not trying to do Chiefs postgame here. I'm really not. We'll move on in a moment. But as I was watching, the two things that really struck me was the Chiefs basically invited the Raiders back into the game when they tried the long pass on that third down, where if they get a first down, the game is over. And instead, it's an incomplete pass, and they have to punt it away. And then the Raiders went into their two-minute drill. So the Chiefs are lucky that they won the game. So that's the first thing. The second thing is there wasn't a lot of time left on the clock. Maybe if you're the Raiders, and you've got a young coach there in Antonio Pierce, but maybe something you learn from that situation is you were unlikely to score a touchdown, and you only needed a field goal to win. And with you not having a lot of extra time there on the clock, maybe you just go ahead and kick the field goal and not go for more. But I can talk out of both sides of my mouth on this one. You had a kicker, kicks, so maybe you wanted to get it a little bit closer. Anthony Becht, the esteemed head coach of the St. Louis Battlehawks, right after that happened, he tweeted out, "How about just kick the field goal? Greed kills. Come on, coaches." That's where things are at with this game today. And again, we may talk a little bit more NFL coming up later on in the program. We will take a break, and when we return, we are going to shift gears. We got a few things to get to today, but Tommy Edman, he's going to be sticking around L.A. for a while. He's got a new deal with the Dodgers. We'll discuss that coming up in just a moment. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name's Matt Pauly, a Black Friday edition. Hopefully you have survived your Black Friday. From what I've heard, I did not make my way out to the retail world today, but from what I've heard, it's a little bit more subdued than maybe in previous years. I was at Target with my wife the other day, and either an announcement came on where something like Target said they honor all prices from like one date to another date. So basically whatever their Black Friday prices are, they'll honor that until Christmas. So to me, being the very simple-minded type person that I am, I said, then why in the world would you go shop on Black Friday if you can get a Black Friday price, if you can get Walmart's Black Friday price, because they said they would even honor any other retailers' prices from one date to the next, if you can get Walmart's Black Friday price on December 15th at Target, why are you going to Target on Black Friday? I don't know. Those are the things that, but I've just seen stuff on social media. I have sensed that I'm not the only person that thinks in terms like those, and not as many people have made their way out to do the crazy stuff. Although people, when I was at that Target the other day, it was on Wednesday night, they were setting up for their Black Friday sale, and they were putting up signs of where to stand in line and stuff like that. So clearly, they were still expecting a lot of people to make their way in. That's not what we're going to spend today talking about. If you do want to chime in, as always, you can text into the program at 314-436-7900. Text in 314-436-7900, or you can tweet at me at Matt Pauley on air, MattPauley on air. We are going to speak with Mike Farron from MLB Network Radio in about 10 minutes. A couple of baseball things that we'll get into today, starting with the news of the day. Tommy Edman is going to be sticking around with the Dodgers for a while. He had another year left on his deal. If you remember, he had signed a two-year deal with the Cardinals, but he has been extended by the Dodgers. He gets 5 years and $74 million, and his contract, according to ESPN's Jeff Passan, is also going to include a six-year club option. Of the $74 million, $17 million of it comes as a signing bonus. And guess what? It's the Dodgers. So what else is included in the deal? I'll give you 3 seconds to know the words that are about to come out of my mouth. Yep, you guessed it. Deferred money. Deferred money from the Dodgers, because that is what they do. Everybody, you know what? everybody does deferred money. The Cardinals do deferred money. We just make a deal about it with the Dodgers because of how much of Shohei Ohtani's contract is deferred, and that's largely allowing them to do much of what they're doing right now. But yes, there is some deferred money in the deal. I've already seen. Now, let me, before I even say one word further, I really like Tommy Edman. I think Tommy Edman's a good ball player, really good role player, plays the game the right way, good in the clubhouse. I always appreciated you could play him in so many positions. It always kind of bummed me out, actually, a little bit. Throughout his Cardinals tenure, this would be my one gripe with the way the Cardinals handled Edman. It felt like they were trying to pigeonhole him into a single position. Yeah, this past year, before he never actually played for the Cardinals, he's going to be the everyday center fielder. And then before that, he's going to be the everyday shortstop. And it, you know, at one point, he's the everyday second base. Like, there's just, it was always, he's going to be the everyday this, the everyday that, but different positions. And much of Edman's value, I'm overstating that. Edman's value is partially connected to the fact that he can play so many different positions. That's why when Michael Ciani emerged, or when you started to imagine what it could look like with a Victor Scott on the roster and also a Tommy Edman, to me, I always thought that was, okay, well, maybe that opens up the door for Edman to really be the utility guy. You know, I was thinking through, before he got traded, but once he got healthy, what is that going to do to the roster? Well, if they're not all in on Brandon Crawford, which obviously they weren't because they eventually let him go in August, I thought, well, if they're not all in on Crawford, Edman can be the backup shortstop to Mason Wynn. He can still play some outfield and still play some second base and do all that sort of stuff. And now, obviously, it never happened. He got traded before he got fully healthy. But that's what we saw from him in the Dodgers. The Dodgers never brought him in to play a single position. They brought him in to play all over. They also brought him in to focus in on his handedness because he's very splitty when it comes to hitting righties and hitting lefties and things like that. So they knew how to use him, and the way the Dodgers used him was perfect. He was absolutely perfect. So I want to say all that. I think it's very clear. I think highly of Tommy Edman. So people from, I think the cynics out there, and there are a lot of cynics out there, there's a lot of people who are so negative towards the Cardinals right now just because of the lack of postseason appearances in the last couple of years, and there continues to be an anti-Marmol sentiment out there, an anti-Mozeliak sentiment out there. Anything that happens that in some way, shape, or form is connected to the Cardinals, there is a group of people, and I think they have a pretty loud voice, who find a way to be critical of the team. So this automatically turns into, he signs the 5-year, $74 million deal with the Dodgers. Well, this was a mistake by the Cardinals to make the trade. Look at what his value actually is. Yada, yada, yada. The Cardinals didn't get enough for him. Yada, yada, yada. Knowing everything that I know now, I would still have made that trade. I think Tommy Edman for Eric Fetty was a really good move for the Cardinals. I get it. Fetty was not as impressive with the Cardinals as he was with the White Sox before getting to St. Louis. I understand that. But Fetty's better than he showed with the Cardinals. And if he remains a Cardinal and doesn't get traded this offseason, I do think we're going to see that. I think we saw that a little bit towards the end of the season, not as much as you would have liked, and most importantly, not at all when the team was still contending for a playoff spot. So that was disappointing. But I still like the upside of Eric Fetty and him being a guy who you can put as a starting pitcher and throw him out there every fifth day as the top of the rotation guy, where he'd be the Cardinals' number two starter. I value that over what Tommy Edman can bring you as a utility guy. And the Dodgers are in a the Dodgers and the Cardinals play in a different financial world. They just do. And that's not an excuse as to why the Cardinals should not compete against the Dodgers. We have seen time and time and time and time and time again teams that don't spend as much money as the Dodgers, as the Yankees, as the Mets, as the Phillies, whoever, we have seen teams have success against them. So this is not saying that the Cardinals can't compete against the Dodgers, but what this is saying is they play in different sandboxes when it comes to the financial side of things. And the Dodgers can go give a guy who's a utility man, who's a very important player for that roster, but the Dodgers can do that. They can go give 5 years and $74 million to a Tommy Edman. That doesn't make sense for the Cardinals to do. That kind of money for a Tommy Edman for the Cardinals, that money can be spent better elsewhere. I say that not as an indictment on Edman, but I say that as a looking at the two teams, the way they do business, the amount of money they're going to spend, and realizing they're just going to do things a little bit differently. But congratulations to Edman. Man, I'm happy. I am legitimately happy for Edman that he gets this deal. I mean, this is life-changing, institutional type, generational, that's the word I was looking for, life-changing, generational type money, 5 years, $74 million. His life has changed forever. Super good guy, really good ball player, and doing it essentially at home. A Dodgers team that has coveted him for a really long time. He had a great postseason, and now he gets paid, and certainly good for him. We will talk with Mike Farron about this and a few other things in baseball. We'll do that coming up in just a moment or so. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX, talking to you on a Black Friday. We have you till 8 o'clock this evening, talking a fair amount of baseball today. Again, the news of the day, Tommy Edman gets a big contract extension with the Dodgers. 5 years, $74 million. To talk about that and much, much more, very happy to welcome on our good friend. You listen to him on MLB Network Radio, being gracious enough with his time here on a pseudo-holiday. It is our good friend Mike Farron from MLB Network Radio. Mike, thanks for taking the time with us today. How are you?
It is my pleasure. I hope your Thanksgiving was very good.
It was. I hope yours was as well. Are you a turkey guy?
I'm a big turkey guy, actually. I make the argument that people who don't like turkey have never actually had it prepared well. So we had close to 20 people here, and I do like three turkeys for every Thanksgiving. So it turned out pretty good, I got to say.
All right. That sounds very good. Before we get into the Edman thing, I want to start with this. Everybody in St. Louis is kind of waiting to see what's going to happen with Nolan Arenado. It feels like there's a good chance he's going to get moved. Might have to wait for the Bregman situation and the Bohm situation and the Devers situation to kind of get that stuff figured out. But what are you hearing in terms of what we might see happen with Nolan Arenado and what teams make sense to you where maybe he ends up going?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those kind of wait and see things. I mean, I don't know that Arenado, based on the last two seasons offensively, maybe has the same value that he did coming out of the 2022 season when he was really great, you know, both offensively and on the defensive end. I mean, he's always been such a good defender and still is. So I think that there's a little bit of trepidation from some teams with regards to the way the power has changed. That said, I mean, you're still talking about a great defender, and I think there are some fits, like, let's say Boston, you know, decided to go down that road and move Rafael Devers to first and maybe use Tristan Casas as a way to be able to get some, you know, a younger starting pitcher. I think that he would be a really good fit there. But, you know, listen, I think in the end, the return is not going to be significant. I think, you know, if the Cardinals are willing to eat some of the money, they probably will get better prospects in return. But again, we're not talking about a guy that's being traded at the peak of his value. We're talking about a guy who is, you know, still a very good player, an average, above average regular at the position. And, you know, probably will be for, you know, I would guess at least two of the last 3 years on the contract, if not all three. So it's mostly going to be salary relief, I think, the Cardinals get if they do move him. But you're right in that I think Bregman and some of the other bigger names have to come off the board, too. I don't think he's anybody's plan A at this moment.
Is this – and Willie Adames is connected to this as well, and he has said that he's willing to move over to third. When you're looking at Adames specifically, is this one of those years where maybe he's going to find more of an opportunity if he does move over to third?
Yeah, that's a really – good question. And I don't know that I have a good answer for it because it seems to me that there is a high revenue team that is dying for an everyday shortstop, and Willy Adames is a fit to the Giants playing shortstop makes all the sense in the world. You know, we don't really know what the Padres are planning to do. They have spent in the past, and I realize that there's a little bit more austerity after Peter Seidler passed away, but you can make a case that they need a shortstop with Ha-Seong Kim being a free agent and Xander Bogaerts not being a particularly good defender at the position. So there's a chance that they could need one too. I think it's magnanimous of Willy Adames to say that he's willing to play another position, but I have a real tough time taking a guy who has been a pretty solid defender. I don't think the metrics were quite as kind last year as they have been in the past, but we know that defensive metrics should be taken in three-year samples as opposed to just one-offs, and he's been pretty good overall. I don't know that he necessarily needs to make that decision now as opposed to making something down the road. But, you know, if he is willing to play third base, there really are not third basemen that are available behind Bregman as a free agent. And, you know, that should open up a few more suitors for him. But, you know, even if it, like, let's play out that Philly scenario you talked about, like if they were to trade Alec Boehm and they needed somebody on the left side of the infield, I think Adames is a better shortstop than Trey Turner, but he would probably slide to third to accommodate him. But I don't have a feel as of yet for whether or not teams really view him that way as a third baseman or a second baseman, or if they're still viewing him as a shortstop. And I think they should, at least for the first couple of years of that deal. It's not like he's old.
No, not at all. What's more likely? Because Nolan Arenado has said he's willing to go over to play first. Or are we more likely to see Adames at third or Arenado at first?
I'll say Arenado at first for a handful of games, but I don't think that that's like again, awfully nice of him, but the bat doesn't really play at first base regularly. Like if you need to step over there for a couple of days at a time because that's the way the lineup works or off days work, then I can see that happening. But I don't see Arenado as being a first baseman. Arenado's value is tied up in the fact that he's a great defender at third base, but he's still really good there. So that one didn't make any sense to me, even though I certainly appreciate the fact that he's trying to facilitate for teams that want flexibility. I'm going to believe Adames is not a third baseman when he signs someplace to not be a third baseman.
So the Dodgers
signed... To not be a shortstop.
Yeah. Right. Gotcha. No, I gotcha. Dodgers had the big signing of Blake Snell. Now they bring in Tommy Edman on long extension. Don't bring him in, but give him the long extension. There's a lot of people out there that are in smaller markets or in areas where the teams are not spending a lot of money that get very upset about these sort of things. Where do you stand on just the disparity in Major League Baseball on teams that are able to spend and willing to spend and the teams that are not willing to spend?
Well, I think it's willing is the word, first of all. I mean, listen, the Dodgers are in a different revenue situation than others are because their television deal is stable, right? And they're getting a guaranteed package of money for the next, what I think it's another 10 or 15 years of that contract goes. Whereas everybody else has had to have some kind of clawback on the amount of money that they're receiving from, you know, say Diamond Sports Group or in their deals with MLB. I think it's like most things, it's a convenient excuse for teams to not spend and for ownership to not spend when they have, you know, revenue that dissipates. And, you know, I'm not necessarily of the opinion that a baseball team needs to be run as a business with profit and loss of a single season. I mean, these are supposed to be investments in the community, right? And your Bud Selig talked for years about the importance of baseball with that. And really, you're supposed to be able to make your money when you sell. And if you lose a little bit every year, so be it. You know, John Middleton, the owner of the Phillies, has been open about the fact that he's losing money, but he doesn't care. He wants to win a championship. So I really don't have a whole lot of empathy for owners that are deciding to sit out free agency, especially when you consider that, you know, and listen, like the Dodgers aren't alone in this. I know a lot gets made out of the Dodgers deferrals and stuff like that, but like every team does deferrals. I mean, we were just talking about the Red Sox, right? Rafael Devers has, what, a $330 million contract. $75 million of that is deferred. You know, the Nationals signed Max Scherzer to a free agent deal, a seven-year contract where half the money was deferred. Like, there's deferrals are nothing new, right? And it's not like they really circumvented a cap hit on Shohei Ohtani because he didn't count for $2 million towards the luxury tax. He counted up close to 46 because that's what the present-day value AAV of the contract is. So like, there are things that people get upset about. There's always going to be some team that is going to go out and spend. People are going to throw up their hands, and they're going to be very upset about it. And I understand from fans, the frustration comes from wanting your team to act like that. But I do think that there are probably some situations where a few ownership groups could be a little bit more loose with the purse strings. And I also want to point out that, like, this was the first time in 40-some-odd years we had a Dodger-Yankee World Series, right? I think this playoff format has certainly proven that it is more than fair for those teams to get in for the wild card, and it doesn't really matter if you win your division just as long as you play well in the month of October. So I think there's a lot of different ways. I mean, the Diamondbacks 2 years ago were not that good a team. They weren't even as good a team as the team that missed the playoffs this year, and they won the National League pennant. So I don't, you know, I think the nature of baseball, one player does not put you over the top. Certainly the Dodgers are in a better position depth-wise because of the way that they have spent money, but you know, a $74 million contract for Tommy Edman is something that most teams could afford if they value the player at that level.
It's and for Edman, it's a really good story because he wasn't playing for the Cardinals because of health. He finally gets traded before he's healthy, has that great postseason. The Dodgers are using him exactly as he should be used from both a defensive standpoint and also taking advantage of handedness with him, having the splits that he has. And he goes, and the Dodgers really valued him and used him the right way, and now he gets paid.
Yeah, I don't think the Dodgers, when they acquired him, thought that Tommy Edman was going to be their starting shortstop in the World Series. So I mean, I think that that's certainly a benefit. They certainly didn't expect him to be the cleanup hitter in the National League Championship Series against the lefties, right? But, yeah, I think, you know, listen, let's talk about the dollar values in the free agent market. First of all, these numbers are huge, right, which makes all of us uncomfortable because they're numbers that we'll never see. But remember that the median payroll in Major League Baseball this year is about $180 million. And so that when you start looking at that lens and you start talking about, you think back, what, 15, 20 years ago, and we thought, well, $100 million payrolls were so big, and then $200 million payrolls, right? I mean, really, that's kind of the middle of the pack. Revenues have continued to grow, as have the salaries. And for a player like Edman, who has been a 2-3 war player, I think, you know, $15 million a year isn't out of the ordinary for somebody like that. I mean, I think it gets missed a little bit with him because he's a multi-positional guy. But really, if you think about this, he's not that different than, say, Ben Zobrist, right? And when Zobrist signed now, what, almost 8 years ago, was going into the 2016 season, you know, that was a pretty sizable chunk for a guy who was older. It was $50-plus million for a multi-position player. So, you know, that's almost a decade ago. I think this is the natural progression for Edman. And Cardinals fans know exactly how valuable Tommy Edman is, right? He can play center field. He can play shortstop if you need him to. He's a very good defender at second base. He mashes left-handed pitching. And he's a guy that when he's healthy, you know, comes to the ballpark and plays hard. So it's a fine sign for the Dodgers. They get a guy who is going to help them in a lot of ways. But remember, $15 million a year for guys that are in their early 30s is kind of a drop in the bucket anymore on Major League Baseball contracts. But remember, the revenues keep going up too. So even with the TV hits the teams have here, everybody's making a lot of money, and $15 million ain't what it used to be.
Mike Farren, fantastic on MLB Network Radio. You follow him on Twitter at Mike_FERRIN. Mike, thanks for finding some time here on day after Thanksgiving. And, yeah, hopefully we'll see you at the winter meetings here in a few weeks.
I am looking forward to it, Matt. It'll be good to see you.
All right, very good. Mike Farren joining us on the program. This is the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Back with more in a moment on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Just a couple minutes left here in hour number one of the program. In hour number two, we'll start talking some St. Louis Blues hockey. Some big news earlier today. Philip Broberg activated off injured reserve. So he is going to be likely active against the Flyers coming up tomorrow night for the Blues. So that's great news. That's really good news. Nothing but positive things happening with this team right now. Just since the hiring of Jim Montgomery. And look, there's going to still be some low moments this year. There absolutely will be some low moments this year, and that's going to happen. But it just overall, it seems like the the ship is moving in the right direction once again, and that's really good. So that's coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. We'll also talk some Illini football and Illini basketball. Glenn Kinley, who's a TV guy in the Champaign area, he is going to join me in about 25 minutes, 7:20 or so, and we'll talk with him, and then we'll talk some college football, look ahead to the football weekend. Big weekends coming up for both Missouri and Illinois. Each team has an opportunity to get to 9 wins in the regular season, which would put them in position for a possible 10-win overall season if they can pick up a win in a bowl game. So big games coming up for both the Fighting Illini and the Tigers. Also want to mention to you, we are going to have the Gas House Gang coming up a little bit past 8 o'clock, just after the 8 o'clock news. And it's myself and Bernie Miklas tonight. We talk about a number of things, talk about the Cardinals, specifically about the use of analytics within the Cardinals organization and whether they use it enough, don't use it enough, and what they can do to get better. We'll talk some Blues hockey as well. Of course, we record the Gas House Gang at 12 noon on weekdays, where it is a live video show that you can watch on Twitter or YouTube or Facebook, and then it gets converted into a radio show that we air at 8 o'clock. So that's all on the way. We've got the 7 o'clock news in just a few moments, and then we're going to be back after that, where we'll jump full bore into the Blues and what to expect from them moving forward. My name is Matt Pauly. This is a Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
1 hour down into our second hour of the program. It's a Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Thanks so much for spending a few moments with us today here on a Black Friday. Had Kansas City Chiefs football on before us. And then in about an hour, when I wrap things up, we'll hand things off to the Gas House Gang, which is still me and Bernie Miklas today. I have you from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock. One of our topics of conversation today on the show, and you'll hear it a little bit later, I threw out the idea of the Blues ceiling for this year. Now, I think the Blues ceiling long term has gone up significantly higher with the hiring of Jim Montgomery as the head coach. But let's talk about in terms of right now, in this moment, in this year, when they hired Jim Montgomery, how much did the ceiling go up? And I kind of have two thoughts on this. Thought number one is, before the season got started, I think we looked at this Blues team and we said, you know what? They're a team that can compete for a playoff spot. They probably don't have a deep playoff run in them, but they can compete for a playoff spot. Maybe they can even sneak into the playoffs. Honestly, even with Jim Montgomery as the head coach, I still think that's the ceiling. I think that's this is not a team that I see having a deep playoff run. I have a hard time believing this team can win a playoff series. Not that that's completely out of the realm of possibility, and there's still a lot of hockey left to be played, and now with a new coach, we probably really don't know who they completely and totally are for another month or so. In fact, Montgomery talked a little bit about that today. We'll get into that more in just a moment. But I still think what we were saying about this team before the season got started remains mostly true. So that's one part of it. But here's the other part of it. What was this team ceiling a week ago? What was the team ceiling a week ago? I guess if we wanted to squint, we could say, okay, well, this team still has they have better talent than what they are playing, so they still have the ability to turn things around, turn things on, whatever turning you want to do, they could still do that. And I'm not trying to create revisionist history here, but is that really true? And I'd probably still be saying it if Drew Bannister was the coach. Like I was tough on Bannister, but I still saw the talent and I was still holding out hope that this team would turn things around. But honestly, as we take a step back, can't we sit here and say, you know what? They were not on the path that you wanted them to be with Bannister as the head coach, and you were seeing kind of a lifeless team. You didn't feel like they were giving their best effort. There were talks about, you know, the one period and that 1-8-1 loss, the third period. A lot of people said that was the worst period of hockey they've ever seen the St. Louis Blues play. Like, stuff like that was being said. And it was not good. So I think at the very least, bringing in a Jim Montgomery sort of resets the ceiling to what it was when the season got started. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing because the ceiling, I think, had dropped as the year went along. So here's the news of today, and I believe this is incredibly good news for this team. First off, Philip Broberg, he has been activated off of injured reserve. In practice this morning, not only was he on the skate on the ice skating and participating, he was the point man on the second power play unit. So what, you know, people who cover the Blues making that point certainly indicated that if he was just on the ice getting some work in, but wasn't expected to play tomorrow, then he's probably not quarterbacking one of the power play units. So the fact that he was out there was a really good sign. And then what happens? He ends up being activated off injured reserve later on in the day, and this is going to be him being back in all likelihood. Jeremy Rutherford tweeted this out just a little while ago, and I think it's a really interesting point. It says, assuming that Broberg plays on Saturday, Robert Thomas and Philip Broberg were to be reevaluated 4 to 6 weeks at the time of their injuries. For Thomas, he missed 27 days. And if Broberg plays tomorrow, he will have missed 27 days. So that's not quite 4 weeks, especially when you say you're going to be reevaluated in 4 weeks. That doesn't mean that you're going to be ready to play. So let's give credit where credit is due to those two individuals, Thomas and Broberg, for working their you-know-whats off to be able to get back. And now they come back to a team, Thomas already back, and Broberg's going to come back to a team that obviously is in a much better place than where they were when they first got injured. Couple of things coming out of the practice earlier today. Montgomery was asked how long it would take for him to kind of evaluate the team and see where things are and the team get up to speed. Because in many ways, this feels like the start of the season again. It feels like a start of the season where you also happen to be climbing out of a hole. But it's not that much of a hole. That's what we kept saying when we were being critical of the Blues over and over and over and over and over again. We kept saying everything that we were saying that was critical of the Blues, but then we would throw on the caveat at the end where we would say, well, but if they get this thing going, they're only X number of points out of a playoff spot. They're not buried. They're only this. Right now, the St. Louis Blues are three points out of a playoff spot. 3 points out of a playoff spot. Now, they've got three teams to jump over. They're tied with Seattle, and then Edmonton is 1 point ahead of them, and then Colorado, a good Colorado team that just has not played as well as they should have this year. Colorado is the team that's holding the final playoff spot with 26. Colorado's played 23 games. They have 26 points. The Blues have played one more game, 24 games, and they have 23 points. There are a lot of underachieving teams this year in the NHL. The Blues were not alone in that category, but 3 points, make up 3 points between now and the end of the season. Like, that's not easy, but it's doable. It is easy if you play really good hockey. Though that deficit's going to come down very, very quickly. And I thought it was interesting just based off the reports. And again, credit to Jeremy Rutherford from The Athletic, and you should read him at The Athletic because he's really, really good. But credit to him for, you know, including these tweets in his social media today saying that Montgomery basically said that he'll start to get an idea of what things will look like, you know, 3 weeks or a month from now, saying that as they go through this process, they'll make a tweak here, a tweak there, style, identity, all kind of slowly grows into it. And then that's where they're going to be at. I already think, I don't know, maybe I'm getting a little bit too emotional about the excitement of having Montgomery there, but I already think this team has more of an identity than they had a week ago. I think this team, because a team takes on the identity of their head coach, and again, not to make this just a let's kick Drew Bannister when he's down session, Bannister's identity, whatever it was, his character, his personality, whatever it was, if it was there, it was never on display for Blues fans to see. And Montgomery has shown more personality and more character in, what, 4 or 5 media availabilities since he's become the Blues head coach than we ever saw from Bannister. And guys, the style of play, only 2 games, you always get that little boost, that little bump when there's a coaching change. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you that what we're seeing from the Blues right now is what's going to, that's for sure going to sustain over the long period. In fact, in all likelihood, it won't, and there's going to be even more work to do. But the excitement, the energy, the buzzing around, the pucks on goal, all those things, we're already seeing a whole lot more of that right now than we really ever saw under Drew Bannister. And I think I'm very excited to see where this team's going to be. Again, Bernie Miklas and I tackle this discussion a little bit during the Gas House Gang as well, which is going to be coming up during the 8 o'clock hour. Up next, we'll talk some Illini football, some Illini basketball. Our good friend Glenn Kinley, he is going to join us on the program. He is the sports director at WCIA Television in Illinois, covering Fighting Illini athletics, and he'll join us in just a moment or so as we roll on with the Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX, taking you through this Black Friday. We are with you until 8 o'clock this evening. Big things happening for Illinois athletics. Illinois basketball yesterday got a fantastic neutral court win against number 19 Arkansas, as they have just one loss this season. They're 6-1, and Illinois football has the opportunity for a 9-win regular season, and who knows, maybe a 10-win overall season if they can win tomorrow and their bowl game. To talk all things Fighting Illini athletics, happy to welcome back onto the program. He is the sports director at WCIA-TV, covering Illinois athletics. He is Glenn Kinley. You follow him on Twitter at Glenn_Kinley. Glenn, appreciate you taking some time with us today. How are you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm doing well, and happy, I guess, happy late Thanksgiving, happy Black Friday, whatever you're celebrating.
Are you a turkey guy?
Yeah, I'm big on the turkey. I didn't get enough of it this year, but that's usually my go-to.
Okay. I am too. There seems to be a war on turkey, but when you really start talking to people, everybody loves turkey. It's like the election. The polls say one thing, but then all of a sudden, everybody you talk to, they want to go eat themselves some turkey.
Hey, it might be a small group of people who are hating on turkey out there, but I'll eat it anytime it's in front of me.
I am much the same way. I know you were in Kansas City for this neutral court matchup between Illinois and Arkansas, and a great win, 90-77, yeah. Yesterday. How impressive of a victory was that for Brad Underwood's team?
Yeah, it impressive is the right word. They got out to an 11-0 lead and kind of just never looked back. I don't know the exact number, but I don't think they let Arkansas closer than probably 7 or 8. From that point, the rest of the game just took a commanding lead and then kind of kept their foot on the gas. And then, of course, late in the second half and throughout that second half, really, when they needed a bucket or when Arkansas would start to make a push, Kasper Yakachonis was the guy. It seemed to answer every time. I thought, at risk of calling out Calipari, I thought that Brad Underwood had a better plan, and it was very obvious. And quite frankly, he may have just had more manpower. There's a ton of talent on that Arkansas team. But Illinois has proven to have so many different guys that can beat you. That's what makes them tough to stop, especially Illinois' offense specifically.
You mentioned Coach Cal, and we'll get back to Illinois in a second, but since you brought up his name, is it jarring to look over to the Arkansas bench and see that man there?
Yeah, no, it was a little odd. I knew he was going to – obviously knew he was going to be there, but then when he walked out for the first time and I saw him on the bench, you know, and wearing red, I was kind of like, oh, what the heck? Because, you know, I had covered, when I was covering Kansas State, I had covered them playing Kentucky, you know. So I had seen him with Kentucky, and everyone had for so long. So it was just a little odd. I think he had the suit on, so didn't look too much different. He still seemed to be the same coach. But certainly a weird thing to see him in a new place after, what, 2 decades.
People have said that this might be Brad Underwood's most talented team at Illinois, and obviously he's had some big stars come through and he's had top 25 teams. He's lacking a little bit when it comes to NCAA tournament success. They haven't been ranked. I'm sure they'll be ranked come next week after they came away with this victory. But do you agree with that sentiment that if this is not maybe his best team at Illinois, this is one of his best teams he's had there?
I think it can be. I'll say it can be. And I've only been covering Illinois, you know, full time. I kept up with them my whole life, but I've only been covering them full time for a handful of months now, and so.
I think we may have lost Glenn. We'll try to get Glenn back here in just a moment. Oh. Go ahead. We lost you for just a second, but go ahead and continue on with that.
So I'm driving to the middle of nowhere right now, but they're young. At times they're a little unpolished, but the talent is through the roof. And again, it's not one guy. It's not one star who you say is so incredibly talented that he makes the rest of the group talented. It's three, four guys. And I said early in the season, they might have five or six guys that are their leading scorer for a given game throughout this season. I think I said 5 to 7, and that could be the case. We've seen KJ do it. We've seen Thomas Lavivesis do it. We've seen Will Riley do it in that season opener. And so they got a number of guys that can beat you, and they're so young. And I told somebody last week, I think Illinois will be one of the most improved teams if you look at their first game of the regular season or their first maybe five games, and then look at the team they are in March. I think that they're only getting better, as you would expect, with a team that's new to each other, and most of them new to college basketball. I should say most of them, a bunch of them are. And so if they were this good against Arkansas in November, man, if they get things going even more, they could be dangerous down the stretch.
One of the things I've always appreciated about Brad Underwood is his path. You have to be a good recruiter, but you got to be an actual coach, and you got to be somebody that can go make players better to get to where he's at on the path that he took, coaching the JUCO levels and everything else that he's done, coaching non-Power 5 as a head coach, and he's done all these things. Does this make this team that much more dangerous because there is so much young, coachable talent on this team that he's the kind of guy that can mold a younger team?
Yeah, and two things, I think you're right, and two things I would even add to that, he's got a heck of a staff around him. I mean, Orlando Antigua was probably weird for him to be on the other side last night because he was with Coach Cal for a while at Kentucky. He was the one who recruited the other Ivicic twin to Kentucky, and he went with Cal to Arkansas, and Antigua came back to Champaign and rejoined Underwood. But it's not just Brad, give him his credit, of course, but they've got a really good staff. And the second thing I would say is I think they've got a bunch of young guys who are there and want to be coached. And that's crucial. You could have the best staff in America, but if you got a bunch of guys who just want to show off their talent and say, I'm the best player in America, stay out of my way, you might be in trouble. I've seen it from, you know, Yakachonis had the best game we've seen from a scoring perspective at least last night. And I've seen him on the bench when he gets subbed out talking to his coaches and going over to different players and asking them what they saw or what he should have done differently. I think you've got a bunch of guys who know they have good coaching and who are eager to soak it up, and that makes a world of difference.
We're talking with Glenn Kenley, sports director, WCIA-TV in Champaign. Let's jump over to Illini football. They're going to travel to Evanston. They've got a matchup against Northwestern, a game they should win. They're about a touchdown favorite in this game. Glenn, this is when you put it all on the line for Illinois. If they win this game, they have a 9-1 regular season, which is fantastic. They pretty much assure themselves of staying in the top 25 to finish out the regular season, and they go to a bowl game with a 10-win season on the line. This is an important game for the Fighting Illini.
Oh, man, yeah. I mean, you're talking about a team that missed a bowl game last year, right? And they have this really unique mix of returners and transfer portal guys and then young guys who – maybe our returns, but redshirted last year, whatever it may be. They got a little bit of everything. And I tell you what, I think that goes a long way in recruiting when you can recruit any type of guy and whoever you're recruiting, whether it's a guy out of the portal, a guy from Central Illinois in high school that's not highly touted or highly rated on the recruitment sites, or a guy who is, you know, these four or five stars, you can point to probably a few different guys on your team and say, this guy's a lot like you and he found a way to be successful in Champaign, Illinois. So I think it is a big game. I think most, if not all, Illinois fans will tell you this has been a successful season regardless of the outcome tomorrow. But certainly you'd love to end the year with a win. Not end the year, but end the regular season with a win. Get that 9-win total. And you're talking about a team that's going to go into a bowl game having a chance to double their win total from last year. That's pretty special.
To me, it feels like the crossroads moment in this season was coming off that Minnesota game, because that game was the first time that they played a winnable game and they lost it. I don't think Penn State or Oregon were winnable games. So That Minnesota game was the first winnable game that they lost, and you were worried on how they would respond to that, and they come out and they just, you know, take care of business against Michigan State. Then they follow that up with a really good win on the road against Rutgers. But that winning against Michigan State coming off the Minnesota loss, that to me, that's the moment where they set things up to be a really special season.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Illinois fans, maybe when they lost to Minnesota, and at that point, I don't know what if they lost, 3 of 4, you know, between – Or I don't, maybe Penn State was early, but they had lost 2 of 3 or something like that with the Oregon one in there and their first two-game losing streak. And Illinois fans start to say, oh, here we go again. We can't really seem to wait to find a way to close season strong and to win games in November. And then they win back-to-back and do it kind of when their backs against the wall at Rutgers would be an understatement in that situation they're in at the end of the game. And they've proven to defy these may be stereotypes that Illinois football fans, unfortunately, had been, you know, plagued with for several seasons. And they've proven they can win games in November, proven they can bounce back from a loss, and proven that this Illinois team is different. And I've said it before on our channels and on our podcast and whatnot, but I think 2024 is absolutely a year you could look back at if Illinois football can continue to build and continue to take this thing to new heights. You could look at 2024 and say that was a huge year stepping in the right direction and sort of a turning point for this program.
Glenn Kinley is the sports director at WCIA3 Television in Champaign. You follow him on Twitter at Glenn_Kinley. That's GLENN_KINLEY. Glenn, happy day after Thanksgiving. Merry Christmas if we don't talk to you before then. Thank you so much for your time, and I'm sure we will speak here in the very near future.
Yeah, that sounds great. I always appreciate hopping on and talking with you. I appreciate you having me.
Awesome. You bet. We appreciate you taking some time with us. That is Glenn Kinley talking Illinois football, Illinois basketball. Lots of good stuff. Lots of good stuff going on with both those programs. Basketball, man, that was a great win. And that was their really second game this year against a pretty legit opponent. Their first one was against an Alabama team that at the time was ranked number 8 in the nation, and they lost that game by 13. So other than that, they just had wins against a bunch of teams that they're supposed to win, and then they get to face off against an Arkansas team that's ranked number 19 in the nation and do it on a neutral court, and what do you know? They get their own 13-point win in that game. So that's an impressive team, an impressive win, and like we talked about with Coach Underwood, I'm a big Brad Underwood guy. I'm a big fan of his. I've followed him for quite some time, and I'm happy he's at Illinois. And I do think that with this young core that they've got there and some really, really talented young players, he's the right kind of guy. And Glenn mentioned the staff as well. He's got the right kind of staff to get that team better. The questions will, until Illinois goes on a super long NCAA tournament run, I would say that there's always going to be the questions. Although, I mean, to be fair, they've gotten to a Sweet 16 under him. Last year they were in the were they in the Elite Eight last year, weren't they? I got to look this up. Were they? Yeah, they were in the Elite Eight. They ended up losing to UConn. So, I mean, they had 3 wins in the NCAA. So sometimes that stuff sticks with somebody and it's not even fair. We can sit here and talk about NCAA tournament failures of Brad Underwood based off what it was like before last season. But last year they went on a nice run. Maybe it's something where it feels like he has to do that a few times where he leads his team into a deep run. And it feels like they can potentially be that kind of team this year, especially if they do continue to improve on a game-in, game-out basis. We are going to take a break. As always, if you want to get in here, you could do so by texting into the program, 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. You can also tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air, MattPauley on air. We'll start to look ahead to the football weekend, and we'll also go through what happened. And again, this is a St. Louis show. I realize that. Sometimes there are national sports stories involving local teams from other markets, and I do think what happened with the Chicago Bears yesterday and then today as well with their coach, Matt Eberflus, being fired, I would argue that that was a national story, not a local to Chicago story. We'll get into that a little bit and try to figure out why in the world anything like what happened yesterday could happen, and where arrogance can really be the downfall of individuals. We'll do that coming up in just a moment here on a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. 20 minutes left in this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Held this topic to towards the end of the show. One area that I don't have a great grasp on sometimes is when it comes to our listeners. This is a sports show, and there are times where there's national sports stories coming out of other markets, and that's just what people are really talking about. I try to be as local as possible on this show, but obviously there are times where the big national story of the day needs to be talked about, and that's kind of, for me, what happened in Chicago with the Chicago Bears firing head coach Matt Eberflus earlier today. This is very much connected to their loss to the Lions yesterday. Now, in case you don't know what's going on, let's some background on this very quickly, because I know there are still a fair amount of people in St. Louis who don't love the National Football League and tend not to watch it. So if you haven't been following along, yesterday the Bears are down by 3 against the Lions. Late in the game, they are coming up on the line that they need to get to be in field goal range to possibly tie it at the end of regulation. They have a play that ends with about 30, 32, 33 seconds to go. They still had one timeout, and they had a third down, a third and long play coming up. So conventionally, what you would do in that situation is you would take the timeout at 33 seconds, you would run your third down play with the hope that you get to the line where you need to get to kick the field goal. If you don't get there, you would go for it on fourth down. You probably still have enough time to try to get that line and, you know, spike the ball, stop the ball, stop the clock, and get the field goal. So you still, with 33 seconds, 32 seconds left, if that's when they would have called that timeout, depending on how you do things, spiking the ball, getting out of bounds, stop, you know, all those sort of stuff, you still had 2 to 3 plays left in your pocket. Instead, the Bears don't stop the clock. The clock ticks down, and the final play of the game is an incomplete pass where essentially they wasted 32 seconds and they end up losing. Now, the Bears have lost in the most excruciating of ways all season long. And Bears fans, and if you listen to this station very often, you know that Chris Ronge is just that. Bears fans have been calling for this man, Matt Eberflus, to be fired for quite some time. He finally did get fired today. But I've two quick takeaways from this. First off, if we're really looking at the Eberflus was probably going to be fired just about no matter what, because after the game, players in the locker room were essentially, without calling him out by name, they were calling him out. They were saying, oh, we don't know what was going on. My job is to go do what I'm told. My job is to go run a play. Like I, you know, but players were not happy. I'm not a big believer that coaches, managers, whatever, like lose clubhouses, lose locker rooms very often. You know, I always get people always like to say that Oliver Marmol lost the Cardinals clubhouse. That never happened. It didn't. People still say that it's true. It's not. He never lost the clubhouse. But this does seem like one where, yeah, Matt Eberflus may have lost the Bears locker room. One of the few times in sports where the leader actually indeed loses the locker room. So he was probably going to be fired no matter what. But here's, you know, there's life lessons in sports. You follow along what goes on in sports, and you can learn something about life. I'm a big believer in that. And here's the life lesson in what happened yesterday. Here's the correct thing to do if you're Matt Eberflus. You walk into that post-game press conference. That's going to be the first question you get, or it should be the first question you get about clock management, game management down the stretch, and you wear it. You wear it hard. That's on me. I made a mistake. I should have called the timeout. I let the moment get, you know, I wasn't prepared for the moment. Whatever. Just land on the sword. And yeah, there's going to be some people who kill you for it. There's going to be people out there that say, how in the world does a guy who's an NFL head coach, how could he not be ready for that moment? How can he make this mistake? But you know what? Those people are saying that anyways. You admitting you've already made the mistake. It's as clear as day what should have happened in that situation. And you as a head coach allowed the moment to become too big for you. You just got to wear it. You got to wear it. And what does he do in the post-game press conference? He talks about how comfortable he was with the way his team executed and the decisions that were made down the stretch of the game. That's the fireable offense. I guess they're both fireable offenses. But if I'm the Ryan Poles, their general manager, I think it's Kevin Warren, I believe, who's their team president, George McCaskey, team owner. If I'm any of those people, I'm actually more upset about the fact that this man is trying to argue and rationalize the decisions that were made down the stretch. That's not somebody who can lead. That is not a leader. A leader, because nobody's perfect. Now, so if he would have been having a good season and that would have happened, obviously if it's a good season, he's not getting fired. If it was kind of an iffy sort of thing, fired or not fired, that's the thing that probably puts it over the edge. But none of us are perfect. None of us are perfect. As humans, we are the dictionary definition of imperfect. We make mistakes. I make mistakes all the time. I take personal pride in my ability to say when I have made a mistake and when I get things wrong and stuff like that. That's a very important part to me of just kind of living life, is when you get something wrong, hey, I got that one wrong. I'm human. It happens. You hope that doesn't happen too terribly often. But that's the lesson in all of this. Every leader in the world should look to Matt Eberflus as what not to do when you make a mistake. Wear the mistake. Because now Eberflus gets fired. Look, he'll get a coordinator job somewhere probably next year. He's been an NFL coach. He's not hurting for money. He's still going to have a very comfortable life. I'm sorry that maybe he's really – I don't know anything about Eberflus, if he's a good guy, not a good guy, anything like that. But he's going to be okay. I don't like to see people lose their jobs, but he's going to be all right. But that's my takeaway. More than the football stuff, it's the arrogance. Maybe it's fear. Maybe the man's fearful of admitting that he made a mistake because he knows what that quote's going to look like when it's written down in a newspaper the next day, or written down on an online story, or run on a TV station, run on a radio station. Maybe that's not what he wants. But the leader who can admit mistakes is going to have a lot more of a runway than a leader who cannot admit mistakes. So Eberflus is out. Sidebar real quick on this. The Bears, some of this comes down on them. And they let this man go to a press conference this morning. They did not inform Matt Eberflus that he was getting the short haircut until after a media availability. Everybody and their mother knew that there was a good chance that he was being fired. A lot of people thought he might get fired yesterday. He admitted in the press availability that he had a meeting later on with Kevin Warren and George McCaskey. He did all those things. The Bears should have canceled that media availability, fired that man, and then held another media availability. He literally went to a press conference and he said, "I'm confident that I'm going to be the man preparing this team to play the 49ers. He lived those words came out of this man's mouth this morning. And then he gets fired an hour later. Shame on the Chicago Bears for making him go do a press conference and then firing him. Don't tell me that they didn't know what they were going to do. Cancel the darn press conference, fire the guy, and then get out of it from there. But that is not the path that the Bears chose to go with today. Made one good decision in moving on from Eberflus, surrounded by many other not so good decisions. One more break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up this edition. It's the Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Just a couple minutes left in this edition of the program. You're not completely done with me, though. We've got the Gas House Gang rolling your way at 8 o'clock today. The tandem and myself and Bernie Miklas, we've got a lot of things to get through, going to some Cardinals baseball, talking through their use of analytics. We'll talk Blues hockey and the ceiling with Jim Montgomery as their head coach. We'll talk through a little bit more of the Matt Eberflus situation and why coaches have such a hard time with game management, and we'll also preview the weekend in football. That includes a couple college football games of note locally. Sort of same thing on the line for both Illinois and Missouri. Each team comes in with a 8-3 record, so each team looking for a 9-win regular season. Each team looking to stay in the top 25. Missouri, number 21 right now in the college football playoff rankings. Illinois sitting at number 23. And an opportunity with a win to then get to a bowl game and have a 10-win season. And I don't care if you're in the college football playoff or not. A 10-win season in college football is always going to be incredibly impressive. So there is a lot on the line this weekend for those two teams. As far as what's going, just keep an eye on something. I suspect that this will turn. But Georgia Tech right now, late in the first half, has a 10-0 lead against Georgia. Georgia loses that game. That has college football playoff implications. Boise State today knocked off Oregon State, 34-18. Boise State still looks to be in pretty good position. Ole Miss, can they work their way back in? They beat Mississippi State 26-14. Colorado today, they're a top 25 team, ranked number 25. They got their 9th win as they shut out Oklahoma State 52-0. Thanks so much for being tuned in. I hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving yesterday. If you got the day off work today, hope you enjoyed the holiday. And we'll talk to you again coming up on Monday for a Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX.